Welcome to Adapted, the show where we discuss adaptations of various forms. My name is Tom, and with me is...
Pat.
Today we're discussing and starting with Marcel Schwab, who was born into a family of intellectuals back in 1867. He studied in Nantes in France. And after graduating school, he became good friends with Robert Louis Stevenson. And apparently,
I like him.
I like Robert Louis Stevenson, yes. And apparently he expanded his friend network and knew everyone who was some sort of writer or intellectual.
He was the modern day, yeah, the hustler.
He was very friendly with everyone. Just weird facts about him I found. He studied Sanskrit under Ferdinand de Saussure, the inventor of structuralism. He was and one of the grandfathers of linguistics, and this guy just randomly studied under him. Okay. Anyway, yeah, there you go. Schwab became a journalist, and then while he was doing that, he wrote a ton of short stories, which are eventually collected into 6 volumes. Speaking of friends, he was also good friends with Oscar Wilde and helped translate his play Salome into French because it wasn't allowed to be played on the British stage in English.
I did know that. I did know. And I knew it was first performed in French, so I didn't realize he translated it. Well, that's fun.
That is fun, yeah.
Have you read Salome?
I have not read Salome. Is it?
That's quite a play.
Is it worth it?
I mean, it's trippy.
Oh, is it? Okay.
She makes out with John the Baptist's severed head.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Oh.
Yeah, so I was going to say, it is weird.
It's a trip. All right. Yeah, so he expanded his network, but spent the last 7-8 years of his life very, very sick. He had these intestinal problems that had to be operated on. And in 1905, at the age of 37, he died of pneumonia. Don't believe he was ever nominated for the prize, but he was talked about a lot. And it seems
he's like one of these guys where, like, I'm glad you mentioned him because I've never heard of him. And I was like, yeah, you know what? Let's give this guy a shot. I'm not sure he's in the same league as Chekhov and Tolstoy and things like that. Let's give him a shot. Why not? Sometimes we find these like diamonds in the rough.
Yeah, he's an interesting writer, and we should give a sort of sense of his writing. At least from The King in the Golden Mask, which is the short story collection we looked at. He's probably more famous for Imagined Lives, but nobody adapted any of those, so it was forbidden to us. But his writing style tends to be kind of ahistoric. He picks stories from time periods or from sort of fantastical periods, and they tend to be very, very creepy.
They're moody. Yeah, they certainly have a mood.
They're moody. They're creepy. You're not entirely sure where you are. Though sometimes he gives you a very specific time and location. There's one story where it's like in between the wars of Henry VI in France. You get like specifically in this place at this time. And other times you're like, in a magical desert, we wandered until we came upon giant domes of women. And you're like, oh, all right, this is very, very different. And so they're like light surrealism, I would say, or almost imagistic. Like he seems to be interested in describing images, much less so in action or completed action. The title story from this collection, The King in the Golden Mask, is a little different. That feels more like a parable than the rest of them. But a lot of them are, they will have very, very strong images, like The Embalming Woman or The Faux Visages, or my favorite was The Melusian Virgins. Which, did you read that one?
I didn't read it. The only ones I read were King of the Golden Mask and the Barge one.
Yeah. So I'll read this, the Melusian Virgin's opening. It's a really, really good opening line. They go, "Suddenly, without a soul knowing why, the virgins of Miletus began to hang themselves. It was like a moral epidemic. Parting the doors of the gymnasia, one would knock into the still quaking feet of a white body suspended from the rafters." It's just like,
Yeah.
that's how the story, that's the opening
That's
lines of the
pretty good.
story.
It's pretty good.
That's a solid opening. Yeah. So you'd have things like that. And then you'd have other stories like The Return of the Fold, which is like a dance party. And then one woman's like, I don't really like dancing. I'm gonna go back to the pig farm I grew up on because I like those pigs. And so she does. And that's the end of the story. And you don't know why you read it. It's not that compelling. And there's a few of them like that, where like at one point they some people what do you call them? Salt thieves who are being held prisoner on a ship, they let them go. And so the salt thieves leave and it's okay. They leave the ship and that's it. And so there's these weird things there where you don't exactly know what the point of that was. And then there's other ones like that, or a really creepy one, Embalming Woman, where you have people walking through this like alien landscape until they come to these giant domes, and in them are women who embalm people obsessively, and they're part of a cult, and they
That's
like,
pretty cool.
that's a really cool image. It's just a really, really great visual. And you're like, I don't know what's going on, but I really like the kind of texture of this.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting because when I was reading them, I wrote a short story once for, like years and years and years ago, and it was like it reminded me of these stories, like, and I was like, oh, this one's kind of cool. That was the one about the ice cream van. I don't know if you ever read that one.
Of yours? I don't think so.
I wrote one because I always had this image of, like, I still remember this when I was living in New York City, and it used to happen for years. I have no idea what it was, and it would only happen like twice a year, and it would be like 2 in the morning, and someone would drive by, and it was always winter, and someone would drive by with an ice cream truck at like 2 in the morning, and you would just hear the like, dun, 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 and it would be like, man, that is creepy. Like, what are you doing driving your ice cream truck around in February at 2 in the morning playing your ice cream truck music? So I wrote a short story about like a kid alone in a house, and it was sort of like a dream thing, where it's like similar to the thing where it's like you have no idea where it is or what's going on, and it was just this kid in a house where the sun has stopped rising. And while he's in, and every night he hears this ice cream van going out. And so he finally goes out one night to meet the ice cream van. And like, and it was kind of like a, 3 or 4 page short story. And I was just kind of exploring this idea because I thought it was fun to write about. And it reminded me, just like as I was reading this, I'm like, oh, this is clearly like kind of the thing that I was really going for, was like what this guy's kind of writing, just these sort of like eerie, no time kind of scenarios where, yeah, they're illogical, but who cares? That's not the point. Like, you're not supposed to question the logic of the situation. It's just, this is apparently the situation, and we just go with that situation and within the parameters he's set, and we run with the story. And I think it's actually like a really fun kind of story. Maybe not like 10 of 20 of them in a row, but like they're kind of just fun as like individual little pieces to engage with.
Yes, I did read the 21 of them
Yeah,
in a row.
that's what I mean. I was like, I don't know if I would
And
have done that.
I would say I don't remember. I remember maybe half of them, having read them pretty quickly, because a lot of them are just like two people broke out of a jail and with the help of a woman, and they couldn't tell who's in love with the woman, so they were gonna fight, and then the story ended. It'd be like, okay, that was pretty boring. There's another one, The Sleeping City, which is these explorers come to a random desert, and they cross the desert, and there's a city there, and there's a bunch of people, but everybody is just standing there asleep. They're in their normal posture.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And it's a really cool, they doesn't really do anything with it. It's just, and everybody just who visits is like, we're out, and they just run away because it's just so creepy. But there's just he seems, I tried to figure out what the hell is going on, and when I read the translator's notes,
Are some of them meant to have a point, or are they just
I
creepy
don't
image?
I think they're just creepy images or
Yeah.
cool images. There's some of them that, like the pig one, I don't know what the hell that was. I don't find anything compelling in it. And from what I could tell from the translator, it was a completely mundane type thing. It's like it's all about identity and how we all wear masks and we have to take
Yeah,
our masks
that's
off. And you're like,
stupid.
this is nothing. This
Yeah,
is
who
you
cares?
have
That's
no
stupid.
idea why these things are the way they are. But it just seems like it's that. It's about finding an image. And he's not that interested in developing characters or doing a lot with the image. He just these stories are, what are they, 600 words each?
Yeah, they're pretty short, yeah.
They're real quick. You could read them on the bathroom, as I did.
Yeah, as I did.
And
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of read the two that I read pretty quickly. I actually ordered the book because I can't stand reading on my phone. So I actually was intrigued to read the rest of them. So I did order the book because I'll read them at some point. I think they're worth reading.
Yeah, I got Imaginary Lives too, which is Imaginary Lives is fictional accounts of real people. So, you'll have like Petronius, which we had from
Yeah.
he's there. And other famous historical figures, I can't think of them off the top of my head right now. And I think it's a lot of the same thing of like, here's a famous person you know in a strange circumstance. Okay, bye. We're done now.
Bye. Yeah, isn't that weird? Yeah, move on.
And it was what's interesting about this is apparently he's a huge influence in Latin American literature.
Yeah, he's I can absolutely see that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
That's actually the name of the story when I named it. I named it Helado because it was about the ice cream machine and it's like the ice cream thing. And so, because I was like it reminds me of that sort of style. He reminds me of Lorca a bit too. He's got a Lorca feel to him. So that's and another guy who actually probably should have won the Nobel Prize, but he hasn't died yet.
He's not dead yet.
Lorca doesn't die till Lorca dies during the Civil War.
Oh, I thought you were saying like now.
No,
I'm
no,
like,
no. Have you ever
how
read
is he
Lorca?
not dead? I've only seen Lorca in Spanish.
Oh, okay.
I've
I
seen
love his
Lorca.
plays. I think his plays are so good.
I think it was, what is it, Blood Wedding? Is
Yeah,
that
Blood
the,
Wedding
I
is really
saw
good.
Blood Wedding in Spanish. And I mostly followed it. There was one thing about like a boy who runs away or something that I couldn't keep up with in the Spanish. But yeah, most of the time. But that's the only experience I have with his work.
Oh, he's great. And his poetry is actually pretty good too. I really like House of Bernarda Alba is actually really good. He's great. And he sort of has this, again, they're not, it's not quite the same, but it sort of has this sensibility of just sort of somewhat creepiness. Like there's just something off about Lorca World. Like it's just not quite, doesn't quite have a time. It doesn't quite feel in a place. And so there's something vaguely unsettling about them that I like that's similar to this. Like they're fascinating little pieces of literature, and I can see definitely it having an impact on his Spanish and Hispanic literature. Because even the sort of great, like if you've Gabriel Garcia Marquez, his things are set in a very specific time and place, but they sort of have they're not quite as magical realism as what's his name? Gabriel Garcia Marquez. But even those, they still have this place of like you don't quite know where you stand or like what.
Are you talking about the war at the end of the world?
I'm talking about The World at the End of the Worlds. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
who's the author? You said Garcia Marquez twice.
Oh, did I? Oh, War at the End of the World is Mario Vargas Llosa. Sorry, I got confused. Yeah, Mario Vargas Llosa is the War at the End of the World. Gabriel Garcia Marquez is like 100 Years of Solitude and those Love and Time of Cholera. But so both of them, so Gabriel Garcia Marquez has a much more sort of magical realism where you don't quite know then what world you're in, even though it is historical. You still don't quite know whether you're in a fantasy world or not because you're sort of slightly unsettled. Mario Vargas Llosa is also historical, in a historic time period, and is less magical realism. But there is a sense of you don't quite know what's going on in certain sections, like little hints of maybe there's something else going on here. So I find that sort of unsettled sense of place in the world to be a really interesting narrative technique or writing technique. Like I think it's very, it makes for a really good story, I think.
I you could see the influence there of like the no place, right? This sort of like we're out of place, we're out of time.
It's like is it the what's the labyrinth, the library, the one with the
Oh,
library?
Babel.
Yeah. What's his name?
Oh,
I'm
Borgia.
blanking on his name. Borgia, another guy who should have won the Nobel Prize.
Who did cite this as a big
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
influence?
because this also has that very Borgia feel to it. Yeah.
Yeah, but this was a big influence on him, and he was a big reader of Schwab. And so yeah, you could see that influence there. And it seems like what a lot of these Latin American writers did was I haven't read War at the End of the Worlds, but I have read 100 Years of Solitude. I've read a decent amount of Latin American writers. They're really good, like starting like 1960 and later.
They
Roberto
were doing more
Bolaño.
interesting things because Europe by that point was kind of just retreading the same Sartrean kind of lines. And so they were getting a bit tired by that point. Whereas, yeah, I think a lot of Latin American writers during that time period were going off in a different direction that's very appreciated.
Another one was Roberto Bolaño,
Someone write him.
who, yeah, I think I gave you his book, 2666.
Oh, you did. And I didn't read it.
Oh, that's all right. He
You did
has
give it to me. It's on my list when I finish
somewhere,
Proust. I will get that's gonna be my go-to line from
Proust
now on.
is in a location. Proust was not inspired by this work.
I just think that's gonna be my line. Whenever I haven't read a book yet, I'll be like, I will totally get to it as soon as I have finished reading Proust.
But he has in that book, there is a very specific place in Mexico that's based upon a very specific place in real Mexico. And yet the entire space becomes a sort of fantasy, like a blood fantasy place where all these women just keep getting murdered. And you're like, well, I know this is a real place, and I know you're linking it to this county in Mexico, this area in Mexico with real descriptions, but it just feels as if you're making this up, as if this is an entirely a fantasy space, like a kind of, like through a magical door or something like that. And this guy has that effect. It seems the difference, though, is he seems not at all interested in plot. He just wants to
No.
create a little bit of a plot, like the king with the golden mask.
Well, that's what Borgia. I mean, Borgia is the Library of Babel has no
No
plot.
plot.
There's no plot. It's
It's a
just, he describes a
circumstance.
scenario. Yeah, he describes a scenario, and it's a really cool scenario that really makes you think.
A lot of Borgia is no plot, or like the one where it is the map that is the territory, that they make the great map. And they want to make the map more and more specific. So they have to keep making the map larger and larger and larger until the map is the size of the
is the size of the
territory.
territory. Yeah.
So it's an interesting irony or something like that in Borgia. And this guy, Schwab, doesn't seem to be interested, I don't think, in irony. I don't find them. You get it with the king and the
No,
mask. There's a bit of an irony there, I guess. And
is it irony?
well, I
I don't
guess
know. So
it's
we
a
should describe what the
kind.
plot is.
Oh
Describe the way she
yes,
goes. Yeah, so we could, yeah.
so this is the title story.
Plot, as we say, yeah.
And the king is there's a king in a golden mask, and his court is all filled with masked people who are masked according to their station, if they're courtiers or if they're fawning women or whatever. And it's a poor man, right, who comes and
Yeah,
begs.
blind. I think it's a blind
He's a
beggar, yeah.
blind beggar, and he says, well, how do you know everybody is not just how they are under their mask? And eventually he takes off his mask and looks at them and becomes suspicious. At first he becomes suspicious, then later they all take off their masks, right? And then he sees that they are not who the mask presents them to be. And then he goes off into the woods and goes running in the woods, and he kind of scares this woman, and then he looks into the river after he's taken his mask off and sees his reflection and reveals he's has leprosy. And then he later meets a blind woman who she has leprosy and doesn't want to touch him. And eventually
She's not blind, is she? Because she sees him, doesn't she?
does she see him? I thought she couldn't see him.
No, I thought the whole point is she can see him, but he doesn't have the leprosy is gone. That's the whole point.
Oh, okay.
She can see him, but she's leprous. She sees that he's blind, but she is a leper.
Oh, right. He's blind, right? Because he
He's
gouges his
blind.
eyes
He's
out.
gouged his eyes out. She can see, and she thinks that apparently the idea is to, I guess, be that when he gouged his eyes out, the
It
blood
cured him.
healed his leprosy, and that he's not actually a leper anymore, but she is.
Yeah. And then they go off to the leper colony together.
Yeah, and then they go off to leper colony together, and then he dies. And when he before he gets to the leper colony.
Yeah. So it's that's and that's the longest of the stories, and it's the most plot. But that has a sort of allegorical feel to it, or a parable type feel to
There's
it.
something I think you're supposed to get out of it. I don't
Yeah.
honestly know, but
Yeah, I mean, you could do the whole like
know
people
yourself
cover
thing.
their real identity behind. I mean, any kind of actual meaning you get out of it is kind of lame.
But
And
that's
it's
what I think. I don't think you're, I mean, I hope you're not supposed to get that meaning out of it because it's so stupid. Like, yeah, we all wear masks and, masks, so, we hide our true identities behind them and everybody does it. And you're really a leper under your mask. Like, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, maybe that's the point, but that's just so trite.
Yeah, it's pretty silly. But it's a fun story because it's just you can imagine this court of people in masks, right? Like it's just he it's a very strong visual component. That's the thing. And so the story itself isn't the plot of it or the allegorical feel of it seems kind of lame or a trick. That's the other feel too, is like I'm reading the allegory. I know what the allegory means, I think. Do I know what it means? Is this actually an allegory? And you feel unsettled. And that's how all of his stories are. There's this just kind of feeling of being mildly unsettled.
Okay.
So I'd recommend him. I do want to read Imaginary Lives. I want to see what he has to say about Petronius and who else is in this book? Oh, Fra Dolcino, the artist.
What's that?
And then he was like a he was a priest who was also a painter. Cyril Tournier, who was a Jacobean playwright. And then some people who were like adjacent to other famous people. Well, not as interesting a list as I thought. Oh, Pocahontas. He just went from the perspective of Pocahontas. Okay.
Very Disney of him.
Yes, yeah. But I'd like to explore this in more detail. But anyway, should we jump into
Yeah, we can
L'Atlantide?
jump into the movie.
L'Atlantide.
So we could do the what's it called? The
Oh, Barjet?
Barjet first, I guess.
Okay. Do you want to do Barjet? Do you want to introduce? This is the last story in The King and the Golden Mask. And it's basically a woman who runs into a barge that goes up and down.
When I read it, I thought it was a little girl. It almost seemed to be, right? It doesn't seem. Is it a girl or a woman? I thought it was a little girl, was almost the suggestion at the beginning.
Was it she was just a child?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah.
I don't know. Let me take a look.
Like, I was kind of unclear on that because I guess when I read it, I just assumed it was a young girl.
Yeah, her father is
They reference her father, and yeah, it struck me as she was supposed to be like a child almost.
Yeah, they call her the girl, the little girl. So I guess yeah, she's a child.
Yeah, so I took it as, oh, it's so this is a child, and yeah, so anyway, they're on a barge and they're waiting for the lock to fill one night, and so they're sitting there waiting, and they as they're waiting, this little girl comes to them and basically says, she's like. She's throwing rocks at the boat, or she's just kind of talking to them in the boat. And then later she comes to them and they go to sleep. And then she comes the next morning and basically says, I want to get on the boat with you. And they say, it's not really that interesting. You don't really want to get on the boat. And then she says, no, I want to get away. And so I'm going to go on the boat. And then she gets on the boat. And then I think the implication is she rides on the boat for like 30 years and then is disappointed because they never go anywhere but ride on the boat. And then,
Yeah,
right? And then it ends.
and then it ends. Then she like leaves and then comes back and yells at them.
Yeah, and I mean, there sort of is, and that's why I say there's sort of this sense here that this is a, it's a, it's absurd in the sense that there's, you know, she just literally is like, I'm going to get on this boat with you, and then is upset that, and they're like, well, nothing's ever going to happen. And then she stays on the boat for 30 years and he's like, nothing ever happened, I'm really mad, really mad at you guys. And that seems to be it. But that, you know, that's the boat, you know, that's the barge. It again, it's sort of this sense you get with it is like, this is weird. Like there's something displaced about it.
You don't really
in terms of what
why.
You see of the location.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't really know. It's again, it's one of these stories. You're like, I don't know what to do with this. It's a,
I think like
kind of
you
odd thing,
could
but
give it a surface explanation. It's about, you know, children and, or, you know, especially young girls and their, they want to go off with men, and the men just say it's going to be nothing but, you know, the same ride that men have been giving women for years. And she says, I'm going to do something more romantic, and nothing actually happens. And they're upset that, I think, like, you could go with that as like, that's what the story is. I I guess that probably is there, but I think you're just meant to sort of see it as a strange story, and it does in some ways inform how you would live, in the sense that don't expect romance from everything. Sometimes you're just getting on a barge, you know. There is a sense of that that I think of what it's getting at. It's meant to be a story in which nothing really happens, but that's fine, you know. It seems to be the thing here, and I don't think it's meant to teach you some grand thing. It's not a parable per se. And yet it does just sort of have, I think it stays with you. I think you think of it in certain circumstances, and maybe that's the point. Like maybe it does have sort of a clear, obvious point, and it's meant to just leave a lasting image in you to help you remember that point. Maybe that is, because that is what a parable is. Maybe it is a parable.
They're like anti-parables, because there's no lesson. There's just the feel and lingeringness of a parable. Not even an anti-parable. It's like a dark parable where you're not going to learn anything.
You could extract meaning from it, though, if you want. You know, as we've done. Like, if you want to extract, I mean, again, maybe that was his point. Like, I'm just going to give you a story. You extract the meaning you want from it. I'm going to give you a lasting image. You take the lesson you think is important from it, and it will stay with you because I gave you this image to go with it. Maybe that's the point.
Maybe that's it. Yeah, the only
it's
writing
sort of a
par.
It's a parables for a not nihilistic, but for a relativistic age.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the only thing I read that he wrote about his own writing, about his short stories, was something along the lines of, if a foreigner from another planet came down, they would not be able to tell the difference between any of the characters.
Yeah. He said this, or someone else said this?
He said this. And he also described it as a sort of like a masquerade of people linked, not necessarily together, but they're as linked together as you would like, or not as linked together as you would like. So take that how
take
you
that.
Will.
But that's, and I guess that's the thing, that is sort of what I'm saying, is that he's like, I'm not going, you find the meaning you want in it. If you think they're all linked, sure, you'll find some link, you know. And if you don't think they're linked, sure, that's also accurate. Like, I think he's that seems to be almost what he's suggesting.
Yeah, which is an interesting project. It just seems like cool images, unsettling. That's it. That's,
yeah, that's it.
That's all. That,
that's
all
what he's
you
doing.
Got. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And so that's what the barge is. The barge is a young girl pesters a bunch of men on a barge to join them. They tell her it's going to be boring. She gets on the barge. She stays with them for a long time, and it is boring. And they never go anywhere except on the barge up and down the canal.
And that brings us to L'Atlantide, which is the only full-length movie from Jean Vigo. And it was released in 1934. And Vigo died during the production of this. which is why he has no other movies after this, because he died. It was made, he had tuberculosis, and they made it in the winter between 33 and 34. And during the shooting, he just got really, really sick from being outside in the cold all the time. And it premiered in February of 34, and he was dead by October. Initially, when it was released, well, it was screened for the producers, and the producers really hated it. And so they cut it down to like 60 minutes. And then they released it, and audiences hated it. And so it basically disappeared by that summer. So the movie was released and completely done with by the time Vigo had died, by the time the director had died. Years later, a few people, an editor actually, got his hands and on the prints and the rights to the movie because nobody cared about this thing. And he restored it to something like its original thing, like it's what he remembered of
What
it,
he, yeah, what it, yeah, what they thought he would want.
what he thought he'd want. And it was released in theaters in the 1950s, or I think earlier, maybe the 1940s. And it was a huge hit with a lot of directors who became French New Wave people. So François Truffaut loved this movie, and his work, Vigo's work, became a big influence on Truffaut. This and an earlier picture of Vigo's, and so he becomes pretty important with the French New Wave. And then, because of this, the production company that slashed the movie felt really bad and decided to find the original cut of it. And they went around and they found it in a British museum. They just found this like a old reel in a British Institute of Film. And so they got that, and they released that in around 1990, at which point Vigo's daughter said, "I think you got it wrong." And then she edited it and she
Oh,
released
yeah,
a
of
cut
course
of
she
it.
does.
And that is in 2001. And that's the cut that's on Criterion, which is like,
Okay.
I think one of the original people who worked on it and her were put it together to get. To get the Criterion Channel cut. Yeah. So there you go. It was inspired by the stories, though obviously he goes in a very, very different direction. And it is a movie about a couple. So that's Juliet and Jean rather, played by Jean Dusty and Dita Parlow. And they get married, and he runs a bar. She just goes up and down selling, I think, scrap metal. You don't really see him do it, but he's apparently working. And they live on this barge with a cabin boy, and then old man Jules, played by Michel Simon. And he was the most famous actor. He was very famous in the, at that time. And he was making the transition to sound film from the stage, and he ended up getting in with Vico, and then real help to his
He is
career
Vigo, the
was,
Carpathian. Sorry,
yes,
every single time you say
Vigo.
Vigo, all I think is
Okay, because
Vigo,
apparently it's pronounced like that,
Carpathian.
Vigo. It's not Vigo. I think it's Vigo. I think it's actually for stress
I
in the
mean, I'm not
first
questioning your
syllable.
pronunciation. I'm just,
It's just funny.
just
Yes.
quoting. I'm just
Yeah.
quoting Vigo, the
Quoting
Carpathian.
Ghostbusters 2, the
Yes.
which one day we'll do as soon as Harold Ramis or wins a Nobel Prize. But oh, he can't. Oh,
Is he
too
dead?
soon. He's dead. Yeah, I think
Oh,
he's
he
dead.
died? When did he die?
Like 10 years ago, I think.
Oh God, I didn't even
Yeah.
notice. I feel like there's some of these people where I'm like, good Lord, that person's still alive. Like that's happened with a few people where someone's mentioned them, like, that person didn't die. They were dead like a
Oh, you
long
know
time
who's
ago.
not? You know who's not dead? Have you ever seen On the Waterfront?
Yeah.
The female lead is still alive.
So she must be like in her 90s, right?
No, she's like 103.
I figured like late 90s, yeah. So like something like, yeah. But I figured, yeah, she's gonna be like 98, 99. Yeah, but I'm like, I mean, it always just amazes me when like, and it's happened a few times where like someone like that, you're like, person's still alive, or even like, some star from like the golden age of Hollywood, and they'll be like, they died at 102. I'm like, They were in movies with, Clark Gable. Like, how is that person still alive? And so I always find that. But then there's other times where someone will be like, that person died 10 years ago. I'm like, oh, I didn't know Harold Ramis was
I
dead, I guess.
don't
I missed it.
care.
It's not like I've been checking in on him.
Interested in the new Harold Ramis project.
Yeah, like I didn't even notice.
The worst thing, so they made a new Ghostbusters and they brought him back in deep fake.
Oh,
They
that's
brought him back
bad.
as a ghost in deep fake and are selling action figures of him. His character in it is dead, so they have him as a ghost, a deep fake ghost, and they sell an
Yeah, that's
action
bad.
figure with like the purple skin and whatnot. So it's really, really bad. But anyway, where were we?
You
Oh,
spend so
this
much time
movie.
thinking about whether or not you could. You didn't stop to think whether or not you should.
Should. Yeah. But anyway, so they go on this barge trip. She wants to go to Paris. They try, they can't, they do eventually. They have a fight because she gets hit on by the peddler, which apparently Camelot in French means peddler. So take that what you will. And then she kind of runs off. He leaves. Eventually, old man Jules finds her, brings her
Leaves and takes the
back.
boats with her, which is just great. Like I'm taking the boat and leaving.
And then they reunite and are happily ever after together, one can presume, until they go to Paris again. So yeah, I'd say I have not watched this movie. It's part of the what they call the French poetic realism tradition, which is where kind of Renoir comes out of. And I really love Renoir movies. And Simon is a actor in Renoir movies at this time as well. I really like this movie. It has no real plot. I mean, it has a
No.
plot, we just described it, but it's not why you're watching it, right? It's just like a kind of a
No.
collection of images or actions that are very, very compelling. So there's the scene where you meet the peddler, who's this very charming.
I like the peddler, yeah. And I guess I liked the only business I had is I didn't really care about Juliet and the other dude. I really didn't really. They were not interesting. I liked the peddler and I liked the old man. I thought they were fun, especially like the old man's collection of stuff and his creepy puppet.
The hands.
Like,
The best thing is
yeah,
the
the hands,
hands.
the jar, like those are great.
He has like an old friend of his who died, and they're like talking about him. And then she opens his cabinet because there she's meeting him and seeing his stuff and whatnot. And she like screams, and he has his friend's hands in a jar, presumably formaldehyde,
Yeah. And he goes, what is that? And she goes, oh, that's all I have left of him. It's just a great, those are great moments. I very much enjoyed those.
Yeah, I like the peddler like hits on them, and there's this long dance sequence where he keeps getting kind of in fights with the boss of the place and also with Jean and things like that. The swimming scene was kind of fun. That's sort of a famous scene where Jean gets very depressed and he jumps in the water.
Oh yeah, that was fine.
That was fine. There's
I
also long distance sex, where you have shots of them in bed at different places, kind of yearning for each other in the
yeah,
sheets.
again, I was like, that was
It's
fine.
fine.
Like, I guess it was just I understood it's like poetic and very nice, but yeah, I didn't care.
Okay, fair
Like,
enough.
it reminded me a lot of that of the Sunrise movie.
Oh, yeah.
I assume this is like got to be somewhat speaking to that. Like, I'm guessing that Sunrise was well enough known enough.
Yeah, I think the difference with it is that Sunrise is sort of non-local in terms of its setting. It's sort of an
No, totally.
impossible
I'm not saying
city.
it's the same thing. I'm just saying it strikes me as a similar. They seem to be speaking to each other to some extent, or this seems to be speaking to that in the sense that yeah, Sunrise has no real setting and it's not the same thing, but they have a similar sensibility. I just feel like of the sort of like go, the couple that's estranged with one another and separated within a in a particularly a city space. There's just this sense of of a similar conversation, even if it's, yeah, there's they're not the same thing. But I just felt like
Yeah.
that was comparable.
They're comfortable. I think they're both poetic in the same way. They're
Yeah.
interested in these, like, they're not, either of them are really interested in plot. I mean, Sunrise has no plot. They get the plot out of the
Well, there's
way,
a
but
plot. There's a murder, and
there's an attempted murder, but they get it out of the way in like 15
and she
minutes.
drowns.
Does she drown? I thought
They
she
think she
doesn't.
drowns. They think she drowns.
Yeah, but then it's so there's a and Sunrise has a plot in the first 15 minutes and a plot in the last 10.
Yes,
Everything else is
that's true.
just they're hanging out in a like a carnival city,
Yeah, in a
basically.
bunch of different places. Yeah, yes,
Yeah.
I would agree. So, yes, there is no plot.
Yeah, there's plot is bookends. Everything else is just music and images and whatnot. I think there's a similar poetry in both of them in the sense of they're interested in this kind of coordinated camera movement. They're interested in how the like the music can play with things. They just want to explore interesting images. The big difference here is I think a lot of the poetry for this movie, L'Atlantide, is there's a lot of just kind of realism that's going on in here. You see people waiting in line for work. You see people in this kind of urban space, and it's not fanciful. It's not like fanciful Paris. You don't see
Yeah.
landmarks. You see like kind of dingy spaces that these people could kind of afford, people of this class could afford. You see them actually dealing with their work. Like at one point, the old man
Which
has to
was
go
actually really
in,
interesting.
yeah, and like defend the barge keeper, and you realize this isn't not as romantic a circumstance as it first appears. They're actually reporting to someone and having to justify their continued employment. I think that's the
The fact that he hasn't done anything because he's sad about his
yeah.
girlfriend.
Yeah, his sad his wife is gone. But
His
that's what
wife, sorry.
yeah. My that is also inspired one of my favorite scenes too, is when they're playing checkers and the old man gets the kid to throw the cat at the checkerboard to knock the checkers off whenever he loses. But yeah, so that seems to be the big difference and a big important thing is that there's this sort of they're sort of interested in a sort of real France, right? They're interested in like it's a
Yeah,
real
I would agree with
guttural
that.
place. It's not picturesque. Everything that's picturesque is sort of imposed, I guess, upon the city. They're not using the city to be picturesque. To be poetic. They're using it with the camera work, right? Because everything they select is kind of ugly, but they make it appealing to look at. I think
Yes, I
that's
would
their.
agree. I mean, I guess it's, I would agree. I just,
You less you liked it less?
I don't know that I care.
Yeah. Okay.
Just to be blunt, I was just like, that's fine. I kind of like, again, I liked the peddler. That was a fun scene. I liked the, and I really liked the hands and his creepy puppet and like that kind of stuff. And I liked some of those scenes, but I did not give a hoot about their romance. I think that just you should have just not had it. And yeah, there's some nice scenes with like the bridges and kind of dragging the boats along. I kind of liked some of those, but yeah, I don't know. I just wasn't interested in it. Maybe there's more that just was not something that appeals to me. And I guess I just Paris isn't my favorite city in the world either. So like, this is like maybe I'm just not a romantic fool, but like it was just less interesting to me as a movie than sort of, I guess I'm not even like a huge fan of movies that are just like, let's show you poor people in their real circumstances, and like, and this will help you to realize the fate of your fellow man. Like, I don't even know. Maybe I don't even think that's what they were going for. I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't think it's like a neorealism thing. That's like a neo, like an Italian neorealist thing where you'd be like, we're going to show the devastation of the war. I don't think they're interested in that here. I think it's just that, it's like we're not going to prettify. We're not going to show the sights. We're not going to show like the Eiffel
We're going to show you the Eiffel
Tower
Tower.
and or
Yeah.
the Louvre or anything like that. It's these people wouldn't do that. Now, granted, Vigo was like pretty political in his life. I mean, all these people seem to be, but I don't think that's really what he's trying to
I
do. I
don't
don't think
think
it's
that's
like
what
a
he's trying to
class
do.
conscious thing. I think
I don't think
it's
it's a
just,
class conscious thing.
yeah, I think they are of this class and that's what these people would would be looking at, what they could afford to look at.
Yeah, I guess I just it's not appealing to me. Those are just not the kind of movies that I enjoy. It's not quite like La Jetée or something like that. It's just those. Oh no, actually I do like La Jetée. It's Sans Soleil. It's not like Sans Soleil, which is just like images of things, and I think you're supposed to
Sans
put, you know,
Soleil.
but
Put
I
them
can
together.
see this turning into that. You know what I mean? Just this sort of like, I'll just show you images of things and you know, whatever. Not my kind of film. Not my film.
Yeah,
I like
I
the
would.
stories more. And I guess maybe that's, I like the stories more. So I think those are more interesting than this. So.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it isn't a compelling plot. And it's what I take away from it is these
And
just
I
kind
don't need it
of.
to have a plot, you know, like I like To the Lighthouse. No, there's no plot. That doesn't bother me. It's just it the lyricism that it was going for was just not interesting to me.
Yeah, but that was the. So we have two artists this week who died before 40. So this is
Yeah.
the. This is the they didn't win, or he didn't
Well, I mean, that's
win.
the question is, would he really have, I mean, I
Had a
guess maybe he would he
chance.
have had a chance? I don't
I would
know.
have
He lived.
loved to see him keep going and just blow these stories up into something long. Like,
Yeah.
could he start doing novels? I think, I mean, who the hell knows in this first generation of Nobel Prize winners? I mean, the people who did win are more perplexing than this man, certainly. But I think if you were going to give him a chance, I think there would have to have been that like masterwork or something like that, the longer novel. I think the thing that would keep him out of it was he isn't doing idyllic romantic work, right? His work is too strange. It's also too uncomfortable. They're not interested at this time in uncomfortable work. They are interested in something that
Happy boy.
affirms, yeah,
In the happy boy.
it glad good.
That's good. He's a happy boy. That's good.
He's happy, very
Happy.
happy.
Give
Here's a
him Nobel.
prize.
Yeah, give him the
This is
prize. Oh,
right.
happy, happy boy. I mean, that's
It
on
is,
par.
but they're trying to like affirm the optimism of the romantic spirit of life. And this is a pretty startling move away from it. I mean, it's interesting. You know, Ubawa, the Alfred Jarry
Yeah, of course,
guy,
yeah. Ooh, well.
it was dedicated to Schwab.
Oh, I mean, again, I
Yeah.
read Ubawa.
Yeah. So it's it
And
like
I can
it.
absolutely see that Ubawa's one of the weirdest things I've ever
Yeah.
read.
Yeah. It's Macbeth on acid, but.
I mean, acid is a gen. I don't even know
<It's>,
what it's on. Yeah,
yeah,
I'll go with acid
sure.
and coke and did a lot of drugs. It's great, but I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, and that seems to be this like something going on in the 1890s, because 1890s is also when Strindberg starts to really
Oh, yeah,
produces
he's moving
his
off the edge.
weird stuff. 1890s into the first decade of the 1890s into the first decade of the 20th century. And this seems to be this. It's really cool, the collection, just because you could see them figuring out surrealism in different points. Like you read Jarre, you could read Strindberg, you could now read Schwab and be like, oh, these different people were just kind of like approaching what it meant to be dreamlike. And it doesn't seem like anybody went, okay, now I'm going to make a dream. Like a Strindberg does that a little later. But,
Yeah, I mean, he does dream play.
yeah, it
So,
is
yeah.
specifically that. But
But
it just
they are
seemed.
working on the imagery of dreams. Now, I mean,
Yeah.
again, I assume this is Freud's coming out. I mean, the interpretation of dreams and, you know,
Soon
there's
enough, yeah.
so I assume they're all kind of drinking from this the same trough here. But yeah, they're trying to figure out an imagery of dreams. They're trying to figure out the surrealist the style of surrealism. Style, not a genre.
Yes, and it's a fun time to read. I don't know if this is great literature, and I think, I
I
mean,
think it's really good. I don't think it ever would have won the Nobel Prize at the
yeah.
time, especially. But I think it's really interesting. And the more you kind of mentioning things like the fact that Ubawa was dedicated to him and his impact on Borgia, which you can see all that. And I'm not surprised. Like it's all they are all kind of speaking a similar thing here, and it's a really interesting style of literature. And so I'm intrigued. I'm looking forward to reading more of his stuff.
Yes. Yep.
Not of
Me as
seeing
well.
any more French realist films. Give
Well,
up this.
yeah, there's a whole poetic realism section in the Criterion Channel. So
I'm gonna pass.
you
I'm
could
gonna
just
with a
go through
hard,
it.
hard pass.
I do look at the Renoir though. The Renoir is
I've seen a
really,
Renoir. I can't
really
remember which
fun.
Renoir I saw. I did see some Renoir at one point. I don't remember which one it was. I mean, maybe I liked it. I don't, but I can't even remember which one it was, so
Yeah,
it
I think
couldn't
the
have made much of an
one
impression.
up there is his sex comedy one, which is really, really funny. And also has an actor from
And
Casablanca in it.
oh, Casablanca. Oh, who?
Yeah, the
Peter Lorre.
guy, no. You know the guy who runs the craps table, and then he's like 42, and then he hits the clip.
That guy. Yeah, yeah,
That guy
yeah.
is the star of the Renoir
Oh,
picture.
good for him. Glad that
Definitely.
he got a good career.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out. All right, any other things we want to say about these works?
All good on Schwab.
Yes. Well, thank you, Schwab.
Thank you, Schwab and Vigo.
Schwab and Vigo, the
Vigo,
Carpathian.
the Carpathian.
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video, subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Keep Making Movies, where we explore micro-budget films, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, and Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Adapt It, wherever fine podcasts are found. Join us next week when we discuss another No Nobler. This is Heinrich Ibsen and his 1884 play, The Wild Duck, as well as the 1984 Australian adaptation starring Jeremy Irons and Liv Ullmann. See you then.
Wow, Talking Studios.
Next week, we'll be discussing another person who hasn't won the Nobel Prize, and that would be Heinrich Ibsen.
We could say didn't, not hasn't. He's not going to.
He hasn't and he won't.
He hasn't and won't. Didn't.
Yes, unless the rules change, Mr. Ibsen will never be a Nobel Prize winner. So we'll be looking at him and especially his 1884 play, The Wild Duck. So if you're a big Ibsen fan, you still might not have read this one, but that's what we're going to be doing for today. So, Pat, who would you hire to direct this work, The Wild Duck?
I would get Orson Welles to do it, because I mostly because I think he would actually be kind of fun to watch in it. I think he would be a good actor in it, and I think he could do some interesting stuff with it. He also tends to do really well with, like old millionaire men and grumpy men and sort of upstart men telling them where to get off, and how the world works. So I think it would be a good Orson Welles film.
He would be good as the old millionaire who like seduced Greta back in the day. Like, it depends on what part of his career he was making this in.
Yes, if we're getting fat Orson Welles, then he'd get in the end. If we're getting less fat Orson Welles, then we can put him. I think he would be good as the, I don't even remember the guy's name, the Gregers? Is it Gregers?
Oh, Greg, the idealist?
Yeah, the
Yeah.
idealist. I think he'd be good as the idealist. I think that'd be a good role for him.
Yeah, I think that would be either of those roles, actually, even the father, he could play. He might, with his charm, be able to make that man a lot less annoying. That would be the benefit of putting him in. Greg, do you see him really as a Gregor's? I see him much more as the father.
I don't know. I just see him as Gregor's because he just strikes me as being far more charismatic than the man who played him in the movie. Who
Well,
just
I think I might be more charismatic than the
was
man
part of
who
the
played him
reason
in
why I would like. I
the
just want to see anybody with some
movie.
charisma play that role. I thought, ah, Orson Welles. He seems like he
he's
could
he's
pull it off.
pretty charismatic. Yeah. Oh, okay, I
What
can
about
see
you?
that.
Whom would you direct? Whom would you get to direct?
I actually had thought I had forgot this question. I realized I wrote down the answer. I had come up with another answer because I thought I forgot the question. And I think the answer I came up with later is better. And that is Ingmar Bergman. I think he would, being a Norseman, he's a Swede, not a Norwegian, but whatever. I think he would do a nice job with this. His longtime girlfriend was starring in this production we saw. So
Oh, was she? Didn't
yeah,
know that.
that's Liv Ullmann. Yeah, it was the mother of his daughter. And I think he would do this type of work really well. The other person I had was Louis Malle, which I think is a little more obvious.
I don't
He's
know who
the
Louis
guy,
Malle is.
he directed Vanya on 42nd Street.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so it was he also directed Atlantic City and a few others, but that was his thing, was Vanya on 42nd Street. And yeah, I think he could do a good job. I like the Bergman thing because there is a sort of cultural compatibility there, I think, between this work and Bergman. I don't actually know if Bergman has ever directed Ibsen. I know Bergman has directed a lot of stage stuff. He had like a group of people who he regularly worked with on stage productions. So I don't know if he's done Ibsen before. I don't recall him doing a film of Ibsen. Of course, everybody with their phone is going to look this up and tell me I'm wrong. All our audience
All
members,
of you, all of you,
all of you,
send us your hate mail.
please, somebody talk to
That
us. But that's who I would go with. I'm going to go with Bergman.